ఓం నమో భగవతే వాసుదేవాయ, ఓం నమో భగవతే వాసుదేవాయ, ఓం నమో భగవతే వాసుదేవాయ. వి ఆర్ రీడింగ్ ఫ్రమ్ శ్రీమద్ భాగవతం క్యాంటో 11 చాప్టర్ 21, ఎక్స్ప్లనేషన్ ఆఫ్ ద వేదిక్ పాత్. టెక్స్ట్ నంబర్ 36. శబ్ద బ్రహ్మ సుదుర్బోధం ప్రాణేంద్రియ మనోమయం అనందపారం గంభీరం దుర్విగాహ్యం సముద్రవత్. శబ్ద బ్రహ్మ సుదుర్బోధం ప్రాణేంద్రియ మనోమయం అనందపారం గంభీరం దుర్విగాహ్యం సముద్రవత్. శబ్ద బ్రహ్మ సుదుర్బోధం ప్రాణేంద్రియ మనోమయం అనందపారం గంభీరం దుర్విగాహ్యం సముద్రవత్. శబ్ద బ్రహ్మ, ద ట్రాన్సెండెంటల్ సౌండ్ ఆఫ్ ద వేదాస్, సుదుర్బోధం, ఎక్స్ట్రీమ్లీ డిఫికల్ట్ టు కాంప్రిహెండ్, ప్రాణ ఆఫ్ ద వైటల్ ఎయిర్, ఇంద్రియ సెన్సెస్, మనః అండ్ మైండ్, మయం మానిఫెస్టింగ్ ఆన్ ద డిఫరెంట్ లెవెల్స్, అనంతపారం వితౌట్ లిమిట్, గంభీరం డీప్, దుర్విగాహ్యం unfathomable, samudravat like the ocean. Translation: the transcendental sound of the Vedas is very difficult to comprehend and manifest on different levels within the prana, senses and mind. This Vedic sound is unlimited, very deep and unfathomable, just like the ocean. So the purport by servants of Srila Prabhupada. According to Vedic knowledge, the Vedic sound is divided into four phases, which can be understood only by the most intelligent Brahmanas. This is because three of the divisions are internally situated within the living entity, and only the fourth division is externally manifested as speech. Even this fourth phase of Vedic sound called Vaikari is very difficult to understand for ordinary human beings. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur explains these divisions as follows. The prana phase of the Vedic sound, known as para, is situated in the Adhara Chakra. The mental phase, known as Pashyanti, is situated in the area of the navel on the Manipukara Chakra. The intellectual phase, known as Madhyama, is situated in the heart area, in the Anahata Chakra. Finally, the manifest sensory phase of Vedic sound is called Vaikari. Such Vedic sound is Anantapara because it comprehends all vital energies within the universe and beyond, and is thus undivided by time or space. Actually, Vedic sound vibration is so suitable, so subtle and unfathomable and deep, and only the Lord Himself and His empowered followers such as Vyasa and Narada can understand its actual form and meaning. Ordinary human beings cannot comprehend all of the intricacies and subtleties of Vedic sound. But if one takes to Krishna consciousness, one can immediately understand the conscious conclusions of all Vedic knowledge, namely Lord Krishna himself, the original source of Vedic knowledge. Foolish persons devote to their vital air, senses and mind to sense gratification and thus do not understand the transcendental value of the holy name of God. Ultimately, the essence of all Vedic sound is the holy name of the Supreme Lord, which is not different from the Lord himself. Since the Lord is unlimited, his holy name is equally unlimited. No one can understand the transcendental glories of the Lord without the Lord's direct mercy. By offenselessly chanting the holy name, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, one can enter into the transcendental mysteries of Vedic sound. Otherwise, the knowledge of the Vedas will remain durvigahyam, or impossible to penetrate. Om Jnana Timranthasya Jnananjana Salakhaya Chakshurunmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahyam Dadati Swapadantikam Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare. Hare Krishna. It is fully unprepared lecture, because I was not supposed to give this. So, let's see what happens. I'll speak a little bit from the last verse also. Because some points were not covered yesterday, because it was more on pastime we were discussing. So, the last verse was, the Vedas divided into three divisions ultimately reveal the living entity as pure spirit soul. The Vedic seers and mantras, however, deal in esoteric terms, and I also am pleased by such confidential descriptions. So, the whole description, the whole discussion here is about the Vedic knowledge, the Vedic sound vibration. So, in the last verse, very interesting point is, the devotees of the Lord, or who are the writers and who are the speakers of Vedic knowledge, they present Vedic knowledge in such a way that it is indirect, it is esoteric, it is parokshavad. There is pratyaksha and there is paroksha. There are two terms. Pratyaksha means that which is direct. We can see in Bhagavad Gita in the 9th chapter, pratyakshavagamam dharmyam susukham kartum avyayam. So, it is said the process of bhakti is pratyakshavagamam, or the process of direct perception of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But at the same time, the Vedic knowledge in itself, not necessarily it is pratyakshavagamam. Rather, it can be paroksha. So the devotees of the Lord, they like to speak about the Lord in an indirect way. And not only that, the Lord himself likes that. So he says, paroksham mama cha priyam. That is, it's very dear to me when somebody speaks in an indirect way. So today we can see, and also continuing to this verse, it is mentioned, the Vedic knowledge is unfathomable. It is very difficult to understand. So that is durvigahyam. That is, it is not possible to penetrate into the Vedic knowledge. So the whole presentation is that the Vedic knowledge, it is very difficult to understand. And not only that, the devotees who are speaking this Vedic knowledge, they give this knowledge in an indirect way. And not only that, the Supreme Lord himself likes when somebody speaks in an indirect way. So today we will try to understand what is the whole secret behind this. Why devotees speak indirectly, and why the Lord likes indirect speech, and why there are different levels of Vedic sound. Because here it is mentioned in this verse, there are four different levels of Vedic sound. So these are the subject for today. So first of all, why the devotees and the Lord likes the indirect speech, indirect saying, Parokshavad. So this verse, actually the verse before, it is being discussed by even many great devotees and many acharyas. The reason being, it actually explains why this, because it's a mystery. Why the whole Vedic knowledge is very, very indirect and it is very, very difficult to understand. Because Srila Vyasadeva, the whole Vedic knowledge was present in an oral form, in the sound vibration. That's the reason we always mention it is a Vedic sound. We don't say it's a Veda, it's a book generally. It is a Vedic sound vibration. Why? Because it was present as sound and people used to have oral reception. People used to speak and it used to have oral reception through the ears. So, when Kali Yuga was about to start, Srila Vyasadeva, he understood what is going to happen on Kali Yuga. Because Kali Yuga memory is very weak. We cannot remember most of the things. And the technology supports that. Because if I remember, when I was a kid, I used to remember many the phone numbers and, you know, one, two, you know, all phone numbers, you know, from the memory we could know. But now we have the mobile phone and it has got enough memory, sometimes 16 GB, 32 GB. So, no one knows, except one's own mobile number, we know nothing. I don't know, I know only my mobile number, I don't know anybody else's. I had to depend on the mobile phone. Similarly, the hard disk space is going higher and higher. You know, it's terabyte is nothing now. Because we have so much of information and we don't have enough space in our head to keep those information. So we need some external support. Then think about the whole Vedic knowledge which is being presented. That is thousands and thousands and thousands of verses. And if somebody has to receive it orally and one has to keep in the mind and one has to understand and one has to apply it, how difficult it is. It's not possible. So Vyasadeva understood. He could foresee, because he is a literary incarnation he is the incarnation for the purpose of giving this knowledge to the whole world. So he understood. So he divided whole Vedas into four. And he appointed different professors who are experts in Vedic knowledge to take care of different parts of knowledge. So therefore, there were different professors. It's like in current society, in the universities, there are so many professors. They are focusing on a particular subject. In the same way, Vyasadeva appointed different rishis as different professors to take care of different Vedic knowledge. And after doing this, Vyasadeva wrote different Puranas. How many Puranas? 18 Puranas. And not only that, he wrote the conclusions in Vedanta Sutra. So Vedas in itself is difficult to understand, and Vedanta Sutra or Brahma Sutra, it's even more difficult to understand. Why it is even more difficult to understand? Because it is Sutra. Sutra means formula. You can explain a concept very nicely in English language, that's good. But if you give the whole thing, if it is technical, one formula, maybe E is equal to MC square or, you know, the Einsteinian formula or something, no one can understand. Maybe you can easily by heart the formula because it's only few words. But if you ask, many people say, yeah, I know E is equal to MC square, I know what it is. But can you explain it? It's difficult. What are its implications? Difficult. Because to understand formula and to apply, one need to have deep knowledge. Similarly, the Vedanta Sutra is in that format. Very difficult to understand. It's like Atato Brahma Jigyasa. This is a, you know, sort of in the beginning verse of Vedanta Sutra. Actually, if you technically see the word meaning, Atha means now. Next Atha means, it can mean, you know, Atha has many meanings. For in the correct sense, first Atha means now. Second Atha means therefore. Brahma Jigyasa. So, enquire into absolute. So actual meaning of this, the whole purport is that Atha means now you have got a human form of life and therefore you enquire into the absolute. And the whole Vedic mantras is very, 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 very complicated. The last mantra of Vedic, the Vedanta Sutra, we will discuss towards the end of this because it is quite related to the current verse. So the Vedas in itself and Vedanta Sutra is quite hard to understand. And even Srimad Bhagavatam, it is also not very easy to understand. Is it very easy to understand? No. Then why there are so many commentaries? And why different people derive different meanings from Srimad Bhagavatam? Okay, we have Bhakti Vedanta purports. So we are not so confused. We understand Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We have to do devotional service. But if you read other Srimad Bhagavatams, other commentaries, one may get complete different ideas. So even Srimad Bhagavatam in itself, even though it is the ripened fruit of Vedic literature, if we try to approach independently without a bona fide spiritual disciplic succession, it is difficult to understand. So why even Srimad Bhagavatam is presented in such a way that it is not so direct? It is direct, but one can still derive different meanings. Often the example is given of Mohini Murthy. So Srimad Bhagavatam is compared to Mohini Murthy. Why? What is the significance of Mohini Murthy? Mohini Murthy is very, very special incarnation of the Supreme Lord. That she, actually what she did, she had the nectar. First, who got the nectar? The demons. And what Mohini Murthy did? She went, she said to demons, you know, I will equally divide this nectar among everyone. So somehow or other they gave. They got completely bewildered by the beauty of Mohini Murthy and said that, oh, she will be fine, we will give. And after that, what she did? She gave the whole nectar to the devotees. And who tried to steal in between? Do you know who? Somebody, one of the demons, he changed his form and he sat in between the demigods. Who was that? Rahu. So Rahu was sitting and Mohini Murthy was serving. And when he approached, he could understand. This is Rahu. Is Rahu. So he was finished. And the nectar came up till the throat. Then the throat was chopped. So this is the situation. So Mohini Murthy is expert in deceiving. Is it correct? He's expert in deceiving. Because she told one thing and she did something else. In the same way, even Srimad Bhagavatam can deceive, if not approached through the disciplic succession. How is it? Because even in Srimad Bhagavatam, there are different descriptions. There is, of course, the primary subject of Srimad Bhagavatam. It is completely about Krishna. But if somebody approaches Srimad Bhagavatam without that faith, without the proper understanding, one can understand different other things from Srimad Bhagavatam. Because Srimad Bhagavatam also discusses jnana. It also discusses the speculative knowledge. It also talks about impersonal Brahman. So it is interesting, in the 12th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, there is a verse which is actually saying, ultimate aim is Kaivalyam. After, you know, we understand the first canto of Bhagavatam is the lotus feet of the Lord, and up till 10th canto is the smiling face of the Supreme Lord. So even after finishing the whole thing, after establishing bhakti as the supreme most, still there is description about jnana. So 11th canto, in one sense, 11th canto, some part of 11th canto is known for its jnana. And 12th canto, there is a verse which says the oneness, the merging into the supreme, that is Kaivalyam, that is the aim. So how can one understand? So the only devotees can understand what is the real meaning behind this. Otherwise, one will get completely misinterpreted. So when Srila Prabhupada was commenting, writing purports on Srimad Bhagavatam, he started his work in India. So he gave some sections of Bhagavatam to translation to different pundits. So they took Srimad Bhagavatam and they started translating and giving back to Srila Prabhupada. And Prabhupada could understand the whole many sections, what they have translated, it is completely impersonal. So this is Bhagavatam and it is only talking about Krishna and his energies. Still, the Mayavadis or the impersonalists, they couldn't actually get Krishna out of it. They gave the translation many words. It was completely misleading and impersonal interpretations. So Srila Prabhupada didn't accept. And of course, he did himself the translation. But that the point is, without devotion, it is not possible to derive the right meaning. And when you think about the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, so many people, general understanding of Krishna, he's actually playing with his girlfriends. If you ask an average person who has some idea of Krishna, who is not a devotee, what he says, you know, Krishna is an enjoying person. You know, he has so many girlfriends. And we like Krishna because I also like so many girlfriends. So we follow in the footsteps of Krishna. In that way it is acceptable. So to the degree that even the Srimad Bhagavatam reciters who give 7 days the full reading of Srimad Bhagavatam, those who read 18,000 verses in 7 days, and they who tell or narrate all different pastimes of Srimad Bhagavatam, even they enjoy the confidential pastimes of Krishna for their own pleasure. They take it as an example, how can I enjoy my senses? At the same time, Srimad Bhagavatam says, in the 10th canto it is mentioned, Vikridam Vraja Vadhuvir Idam Cha Vishnu Shraddhanvito. That is Vikridam, that is the intimate pastimes of Krishna with gopis. If somebody actually with Shraddha, if somebody studies and understands and glorifies with Shraddha, with devotion and with faith, then what is the effect? Hridrogam Ashu Apahinoti Achirena Dhira. Hridrogam, everyone is heart patients here. Maybe pure, you know, some people are not heart patients, but everyone else is heart patients. What is our heart disease? The contamination within the heart. Due to that, we don't want to serve Krishna. So that is the heart disease. It's not we can go to a physician and, you know, check the heart, okay, the blood circulation, everything is good, heart is pumping very nicely. That's not our heart disease. But our heart disease is, we don't have enough Shraddha, not enough faith in Krishna. And we think something else is much better. So it is said, if somebody approaches Srimad Bhagavatam with that Shraddha, then one's heart disease will be gone immediately. Not after, you know, after 100 or 1000 years, but immediately, that's what it's mentioned. Depends on the Shraddha, depends on the amount of faith. Now, so there are different levels in which Srimad Bhagavatam is presented, and the devotees also can understand what are these different levels. And the ultimate conclusion of Srimad Bhagavatam, which is bhakti, that a pure devotee can very easily understand and he can present. That is done by Srila Prabhupada. So we understand. Otherwise we will also get confused. Same with Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita has, you know, most of the commentaries are in Bhagavad Gita is Mayavad commentaries. It's impersonal commentaries. Srila Prabhupada mentions in the introduction to Bhagavad Gita, why I wrote this version of Bhagavad Gita, why I write commentary to Bhagavad Gita. Prabhupada says the reason is, to my knowledge, all of the commentaries are, the authors are presenting their own personal opinion. So what's the whole point? So the knowledge about Krishna is confidential. It's not because the Bhagavatam is not available, or it's not because Bhagavad Gita is not available. It is because the right understanding is lacking. And the right understanding we can derive only from the devotees. So that's the reason there are different levels. So Krishna actually hides himself in Bhagavad Gita. Krishna hides himself in Srimad Bhagavatam. And only a devotee can actually bring him for everyone. Now in this verse, it's talking more about the Vedic sound, how it is unfathomable. So there is a bit of a technical presentation. That is, there are four levels of sound. Four levels of sound. That is, one is the Vaikari walk, Pashyanti walk, Madhyama walk, and Para walk. So these are the four different kinds of Vedic presentation, the Vedic sound. So what is it? So far, to our understanding, sound means, you know, what we can hear, that's it. That is sound. Maybe we can measure the frequency or the pitch or whatever. That is sound. We know nothing more than that. But when we are talking about the Vedic sound and its classification, it is classified into four. So the sound we can hear from Vedas, generally it is known as Vaikari walk. Vaikari means it has a, we can listen. We can actually perceive through our blunt senses. But of course, it also requires, when it comes to the Vedic sound, it also requires some training to listen it properly, to remember, to pronounce, and it needs training, it's not so easy. That is Vaikari. And it is said, the Vaikari walk, or the sound that which we can hear, it has a potency. And that potency is called Kriya Shakti. Kriya Shakti means the potency for creation. So Srila Prabhupada explained this point in this way. He asked, he was on a morning walk and there was a big skyscraper. So he asked how this building was manifested. So, you know, devotees started giving different replies, you know. First they planned, they did this, they had a design, they brought all the raw materials, they started construction, they had a big plan, the whole thing, you know, explained different steps. Prabhu said, yeah, that's all right, that was involved in this construction. However, it all started from just talking about it. People started talking about it. So from the speech, actually people got inspired, and from there, the whole construction started. So it is said the Vaikari Vak or the external sound has the potency to create. Of course, it has a potency to destruct also, because many of the activities in this world are not just creation. There is a lot of destruction as well. So that is the potency of the sound in the external form, or the one we can listen to. And in the next level of sound is Pashyanti. So we are talking about the gross sound and the subtle sound. It's like we have the gross body and the subtle body. There are gross elements and the subtle elements. In the same way, the sound is also gross sound and the subtle sound. So gross sound is the Vaikari, which has a creative potency, and there is a subtle sound, and that is existing within, and which we cannot hear. That is on one level, that is in the level of mind, that is known as Pashyanti Vak. Pashyanti. Because in the mental level, the Pashyanti Vak, it can influence the mind. So that kind of sound vibration can influence the mind. So the Vedic sound can influence not just the external activities, it can influence the mind. It's like when we chant mantra, or if you go to different yoga studios, people chant mantra. So it has some impact on the mind. It's not just, even we chant Hare Krishna, it's not just the external sound that we are hearing, but it has the impact on the mind. So that is Pashyanti Vak. And the next level is Madhyama Vak. Madhyama Vak is in the level of intelligence. The sound which can influence the intelligence. So the Vedic sound, it can actually influence our intelligence, which is very obvious. If we hear from Bhagavad Gita, if we hear the principles of Bhagavad Gita, naturally it will affect our intelligence. Is it correct? Otherwise, how can we control our mind? If we don't have any intelligence, then how can we control our mind? If mind is roaming around everywhere, then how can we bring it back when we chant the holy name if without intelligence? So the Vedic sound can certainly influence the intelligence. And that section, that part, or that classification is known as the Madhyama. Madhyama, actually, technically Madhyama means in between. So it is in between two things. What are those two things? One is the subtle material realm, and the other side is the spiritual realm. So the Madhyama Vak is in between. Because the next level is Para. Para means completely transcendental. So if you chant Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, it is Para. Because it is completely transcendental sound vibration. So the Madhyama is Madhyama, or the in between, because it is between the transcendental realm and the material subtle realm. It is still material, but it is in between. So it is Madhyama Vak. So ultimately one has to come to the Paravak, or one has to come to the Vedic sound which talks about the spiritual subject matter. Because Vedas deal with all different things. It deals with the material nature, it deals with the different kinds of different things which are required in this world to live. So it is material. Traigunya Vishaya Veda, Nish Traigunya Bhavarjuna. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, because the Vedas is contaminated by, infected by three modes of material nature. So one has to come above that if one has to transcend the modes of material nature. So ultimately one has to come to the Paravak, or the transcendental sound vibration that can help one to get out from the material cycle. It's like we are rotating, you know, it's just like a door, in a rotating door, you know, we are going again, going in one direction, coming back, going in one direction, and no one is so caught up in the door that one doesn't want to get out of it. It's like a prison where all the facilities are provided. Some in between there is some miseries, or some for some people there is always miseries. But if somebody has always miseries, they think there is a hope that things will get better. And somebody is already enjoying and the miseries are a bit less, then one thinks, okay, it's a nice place. So in either situation, one is caught up. So one needs the Paravak, or the transcendental sound vibration, to get out of it. Otherwise, there is no possibility. Otherwise, it always remains unfathomable. Even the Vedas, when it is not coming from the devotees, it becomes unfathomable, or durvigahyam. One cannot penetrate through. one cannot understand the real meaning. So we had to be really thankful to Srila Prabhupada, because this unfathomable knowledge has become fathomable by the mercy of the devotees, by mercy of Srila Prabhupada. Otherwise, there is no question of spiritual progress. It's like if you take even a small book of Srila Prabhupada and if you read that, how clear it is. Just a small book which is based on Bhagavad Gita, for instance, Beyond Birth and Death, any book if you take, how clear it is, how clearly the knowledge is presented. I was hearing in one lecture, it was mentioned, for some spiritualists, they think when something is presented which nobody can understand, then the job is very successful. One Buddhist monk was giving a lecture and nobody could understand anything, but he was very self-satisfied after the lecture, because you know he could actually show his prowess of knowledge and nobody could actually understand. At the same time, Srila Prabhupada, when he talks to anybody, he made sure that they understood. So he presented in such a way that in different levels. Here also it is presented, Vedic knowledge is presented in different levels. In the same way, Srila Prabhupada, when he presented Vedic knowledge, he presented in different levels, according to different people, but at the same time, not compromising. Because that is difficult. Because when we speak to different people, we can compromise. We have the tendency to compromise the actual philosophy and we can water it down. But Srila Prabhupada, when he presented, even though he presented the same knowledge in different levels to different people, he never compromised. So that is very, very, very important point. We can see when Prabhupada spoke to even the kids, Prabhupada spoke to big philosophers, still he never compromised. He presented the truth. In one conversation with big university professors, it is an interesting conversation because the whole it's in a garden in America somewhere, I can't remember exactly where. All these different professors and big university people are there, and Srila Prabhupada is presenting, and Prabhupada is straight away telling them, look, you are all theologians, you are studying philosophy and you are studying philosophy, and what you are looking for, that is ultimately God. And what you are looking for, we have. That is Krishna, and we are giving it to you. Why don't you take it? This was the beginning of the conversation. It was straight. You are looking for Krishna, you are looking for God, and for that, to that end, you are doing so many philosophical discussions, so many conferences, so many publications. Okay, well, the whole thing is going on, but we are giving it for free, we are giving it to you. You take it. And suddenly one kid came and asked, do you know who is Krishna? So the kid said, yeah, I know Krishna. Krishna is Supreme Personality of Godhead. Krishna is God. He is Supreme Personality of Godhead. He said, yeah, even a kid can know. So, you know, these are professors, you know, who are studying, who are dedicated their life for speculating on the absolute, but here is a kid. She knows the conclusion. So that simple is the process of Krishna consciousness. When we hear from the devotees, it is quite straight. And it is also very, very important to understand that it has become very simple by the mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, which is coming through Srila Prabhupada. Because so far, till the time of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, it was actually Durvigahyam in one sense. Even though whole Vedic knowledge was present, it was very, very difficult to understand what is the ultimate conclusion. So if you see the predecessors of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that is Sri Ishwarapuri or Madhavendrapuri, they were in hiding actually. Because they were thinking the whole world is full of materialistic people. They were not actually going out so much. And that was the time actually Mahaprabhu came and actually he gave this knowledge to everyone. So it is mentioned in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, a very interesting aspect of mercy of Mahaprabhu. It is mentioned, even a foolish child, okay, we are not talking about learned scholars, but about a foolish child. Even a foolish child who has got the mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu can understand the enjoying pastimes of Krishna in Vrindavan. So that is the highest. The highest understanding is Krishna in Vrindavan. The pastimes of Krishna in Vrindavan. So Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, he says, even a foolish child, even he can understand the whole pastimes of Krishna as it is, simply by getting the mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So that mercy is coming through the disciplic succession, and that is coming through Srila Prabhupada. So that is the only way we can actually approach Vedas. And by that, if we approach Vedas, then this Durvigahyam becomes actually fathomable. One can really understand. So I conclude here and see, is there any questions or comments or corrections? Yes, Prabhu.
You wanted to tell some words, you said in the end you will tell them.
Okay. Yeah, that is a good point. Thank you for reminding me. So we spoke a little bit about Vedanta Sutra. So the last verse of Vedanta Sutra is Anavriti Shabdat or Anavriti Shabdat. Meaning, two times it is said. The meaning of this is, one can actually get liberation from Shabdat, from the sound vibration of Vedas. And if one gets that liberation, then one doesn't have to come back to this material world. So that is Anavriti Shabdat. It is, I think it's called in the last verse as well. Yeah, in the purport. Anavriti Shabdat. Yeah. Yes, Prabhu.
There are two examples in Srimad Bhagavatam, fourth canto, which we recently studied in the where the power of sound is given, where the power of sound has the power to create as well as destroy. It is mentioned that when King Vena was beyond his limits and the Brahmanas wanted to kill him, then it is, Prabhupada writes that they just killed him with the power of harsh words.
Hmm.
So simply that was enough to kill him. They didn't have to use any weapons. And then subsequently Prabhupada also gives an explanation on the Ashwamedha and Gavalamba
Vigyas,
and where he says that the power of sound can release the soul from one body and then create another body and then insert the soul into that body.
Yeah, that's a very interesting point. That Gavalamba, for instance, you know, how they kill the cow in the sacrifice and the cow will get a human body in the world of goodness, I suppose. And that is a test for the Vedic mantras, a test for the Brahmanas, because the Vedic mantras are perfect, but how perfectly are they pronouncing and how pure are they? It's a test for that. And if you do that now, then we will just simply incur sins, that's all. Yes, Prabhu.
Can you please recap why Krishna wanted Vedas to be indirect?
Okay, it's indirect because the knowledge is presented in different levels so that one who doesn't have faith cannot understand it properly. One needs faith to approach Vedas. So even Srimad Bhagavatam, to approach Srimad Bhagavatam, one needs faith. That's the reason I was quoting the verse from 10th canto where it is mentioned that Vikriditam Raja Vadupiritam Te Vishnu. That is the intimate pastimes of Krishna and gopis. It is present for everyone in one sense. But some people, they degrade themselves listening the same pastimes. But one who has Shraddha, their heart is getting purified. So the same thing is there. So in one sense, it is a qualification. One needs that faith. Because without faith, one cannot approach. That is the beginning of the spiritual life. So that is very, very important. Yes, Prabhu.
Narada Muni also used Puranjana example in 4th canto to tell King Mahesha. Because he didn't want to say directly to the king.
Yeah.
So he wanted to tell indirectly so that he can understand.
Yeah.
Everything that he's saying is about him.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a nice allegory, Puranjana.
How one can develop faith?
Okay. Faith. We can develop faith through association. If we associate with those who have faith, then we develop faith. So if you want to increase our faith, if we associate with somebody who has more faith than us, then we actually increase our faith further. And at the same time, that is one part of it. And on the other part is, when we actually, one needs a little bit of faith to start devotional service. That can come, maybe it can take lifetimes, it can take few seconds. But if we expose to devotional service knowingly or unknowingly, that can actually give some faith. And at one point, one can actually start with the process of devotional service. And one can increase one's faith if we apply it through the process of devotional service. And when we actually see it is working, when the process is working, then our faith increases. And with that faith, when we do more devotional service, both quality and quantity, then actually it will further increase our faith. So that is another ladder, you know, it goes like that, the faith increases. So it's not that the faith is the beginning, it is just the beginning. Shraddha is the beginning, but even the Prema Bhakta has faith, but to the highest. So the faith is there, the degree increases, that's all. So it is there always, the faith is increasing and increasing and increasing. Yes, Prabhu.
On the same point, what we are discussing, Srila Prabhupada discussed in 9th chapter, Bhagavad Gita, how you become a Mahatma. not by his stamp, by expression of other Mahatmas, pure devotees, other Mahatmas.
Yeah.
So there is no other way. That is the best example to get faith.
Yes, Rob.
Comments in the first time. I remember hearing from Vidal and Nash for some time. He said it's never a position where Vidal had fight.
Yeah.
You always have faith in something.
Yeah.
Whether it's yourself or some other philosophy.
Yeah.
I mean, even if you're faithless, you have faith.
Faith.
In
yeah. Yeah.
But he said, oh, what about an atheist? You have faith in atheism.
Yeah.
One thing I remember, Dudley, there's a bank in Auckland. Their slogan used to be "Together We Are Strong."
Huh?
I had some time with them carrying a bunch of sticks or something. The idea is in that bunch, when you're a bunch together,
yeah,
you become strong with good association.
Yeah.
You become more faithful.
Thank you. Yeah, one point I remember when Prabhu was mentioning that is regarding faith. Because the faith comes from in which mode of material nature we are associated, in that way we will develop a faith anyway, because it's the product of, because according to our actions we are at present, we are affected by a certain mode of material nature, either goodness or passion or ignorance in a certain combination, and within that combination of we develop a certain kind of faith, and that can be material faith or anything, and with that faith we actually start worship or adoring something. That actually starts from this. So when we actually transcend that material modes, and when we come to the pure, when we get that elements of pure goodness where we actually get the transcendental faith, then actually our devotion starts. So far we have that. Since we are affected by the material mode of nature, still we have material faith. And on the other side we have faith in Krishna. So we are actually trying to have both. Some faith in the material energy and some faith in Krishna. So it is not 100%. So that's where as the devotion increases, that is the transformation. We will become less affected by the modes of material nature, and then the faith in the material energy reduces and faith in Krishna increases. So one actually becomes completely purified, this transformation becomes complete. So as Prabhu was mentioning, that faith has to be there all the time because we are affected by the modes of material nature. Yes, Prabhu.
Srila Prabhupada simplified everything so easily. If you remember A, B, C, D.
Yeah.
A is station, B reading Prabhupada's book, C is chanting, and D is devotional service.
Yeah.
If you know A, B, C, D, you know.
Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Is there any final comments or questions? Okay. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki.
Yeah.